Alright, we're on tape. Today is October 10th, 2017, and this is Chuck Mobley, and I'm talking with Brian Hawkins, who's the Harbor Master in Homer, and the subject for today that I'm working on is the National Register nomination or eligibility evaluation of the Homer Timber Dock. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Brian and ask a few questions. Brian, what's your full name?
Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, Hawkins, H-A-W-K-I-N-S.
And you were born?
I was born in 1957, November 24th, 1957, in Corvallis, Oregon. Joyce and Cliff Hawkins are my parents, They're both passed away now. I grew up in a little town close to Corvallis called Shedd, S-H-E-D-D, Oregon. A very small, 350 people lived there. It was a farm community. And the major project or product for the area was grass seed. So that area of Oregon is the grass seed capital of the world.
What companies did you sell to?
I actually don't know. I was a farm hand, so you plow the field, you run the combines, you bag the seed, you do all of that stuff.
And your family was involved?
My family was not. Dad drove long haul truck, and then we had a cabinet shop as a family. He took it over from my granddad, and my oldest brother took it over from him. And it's not operating anymore. Oldest brother Jeff ran it for about 15 or 20 years and then closed it down and became a high school shop teacher.
Huh.
Yeah. So.
Did your grandfather settle there as a young man?
Granddad, so they got hit by the Depression. They came from Missouri and he had the family farm there. He took it over. And as I understand it, he had debt when the Depression hit that he couldn't solve, and they had to sell the farm, and he came away with a flatbed truck, four sons, his wife, and $350, and they migrated to Oregon. He had other skills. He was a builder, and so he got work, and he could witch wells, which was a talent that not everybody has. So he could find water for people reliably. And,
did you ever witness that?
I did. I tried to get him to teach me that, and I have dead hands, so couldn't make the magic happen. And I really wanted to know that skill. I love that trick. He could find a water line, trace out a water line.
Interesting.
Yeah. But so when they got to Oregon, he was building and everything. They had a lottery in Oregon at the time for farms that had been repoed, and he put his name in on the lottery and won a farm in Shedd, Oregon. And so the kids were all still home, and so he moved on this farm, and they all worked like slaves and built a farm, row crops, and for U-pick and things like that. And that's where they settled. So but I don't remember how many acres that farm is, but my oldest brother actually inherited the farm and then bought up the properties from the rest of the siblings. And so he's kept that place intact.
Boy, I wish my siblings would do that to our family farm in Ohio.
Yeah.
Nobody else stepped to the plate, me included.
Yeah. So it's a commitment.
It's going to go.
Yeah.
After grandparents too, same deal. Mm-hmm. You know, all the way back to the Depression. Well, how'd you get to Alaska then?
Well, when I was growing up, there was a big push to settle Alaska to maybe bring people up here so resources could be harvested, so the state could become more relevant, I believe. That's my thoughts behind it now. All I know is as a kid, there was, all the slogans, north to Alaska, north to the great land, go north, young man. I mean, all of this stuff. Maybe that was the Linn County sheriff, I think, was a go north, young man. But the draw of Alaska was real strong in Oregon. And I'd actually delivered newspapers. As a kid, I delivered newspapers to a family that would move back to that area for the winter, and the Devaneys. And they had settled in Homer in the 50s. And so the sons still lived here. And Max and Dorothy would move down to Oregon for the winter and then come back to Alaska for the summer. And so when I was a newspaper boy delivering newspapers, he talked to me about Alaska. And I tried to talk my folks into letting me come up when I was about 13, but they of course, wouldn't have any part of that. So I had to wait.
Changed your life?
Yeah. Yeah. So then I made my first trip to Alaska in 77. Got a job working for Tyonic Timber across the inlet and worked there for 5 months, and then went back home and then came back up to work for Devaney's, actually. Called them, just cold called them, and got a job working for them here in Homer. They had a small processing plant over across the harbor where the Coast Guard buoy yard is right now. That's used to be, had a little shop there called Seafoods, and processing and retail. They had three boats, and I went to work in the cannery to begin, or the processing plant to begin with, and then Mike hired me on as a deckhand, and that took. I fell in love with commercial fishing.
Do you remember the names of their boats?
Oh yeah, the Miss Charlotte. I've got pictures here too. The Miss Charlotte was the boat that I broke in on. And they had the Midnight Sun, which was a 32-foot wood boat that after 2 years deckhanding, they gave me that boat to operate. So I became a skipper then and fisherman. And then they also had the Violet, which is pictured on the wall right there. And that's her wheel behind you hanging on the wall. And then we bought the American Eagle. And we owned that for 15 years. So I fished commercially and had my captain's license. And I did all of that for 22 years before I came to work for the city. And I started with the city in 2000 as a harbor officer, just entry level. And then in 2004, I was promoted to deputy harbor master. And then in 2008... I was promoted to harbor master, and I've been doing that ever since.
2000, a harbor, what's the term?
Harbor officer, officer. 1, so that's entry level, uh-huh. And then you promote to harbor officer 2. And
what's a full group of people here to operate?
We have 18 full-time employees. Uh-huh. We put on 9 seasonal hires as well to help with the summer season. And that's okay. The group we're broke down. So we have operations, which are harbor officers. We have admin, which I'm now a part of. And we have ice plant. We actually have an ice production plant and fish dock. And then we have a maintenance department.
And I want to go back. When did you start fishing? When you came up the second time and
started
fishing?
78.
78, the year after. Okay.
Yeah.
So you got to see the 1965 dock in operation for a number of years.
I did.
Starting in 78. And compared to now, what was it like? If you had to describe it back then, how would you describe it?
Rickety.
It was rickety even then.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's interesting to me. We have some archived photos of that dock with, you know, a 400-foot barge alongside, fully loaded, you know, triple or four stacks of four of containers on it and equipment, of a flatbed truck backed out on the long approach ramp, and a crane sitting on the dock, lifting containers onto the trucks, offloading. And, you know, back then that was what we had. That's what was used and nobody thought anything about it. But when you start designing docks, talking about docks now, that one wouldn't even pass first blush as far as being acceptable. Load limits and things like that, wheel loads and live load limits would be not acceptable at all. So it's just
Can you elaborate? Because I'm pretty ignorant.
Well, you know, the I don't even know what the allowable load limits on that old wooden trestle were. But I know that when the ferry would come in and land on it, if they bumped too hard, you had to kind of brace yourself because the whole dock was going to move. But with the new dock, the Pioneer dock, it's built to 500 pounds per square foot. And that's built very heavy. And in some cases, docks are built to 1,000 pounds per square foot, live load.
So back when the rickety dock was in use from 1970, when you saw it onward, what kind of vessels docked there? What was it used for? Containers, you say?
Well, we did. And we did see barges with containers coming in. And I think that went on fairly regular until they've got better facilities built in Seward. And then, of course, in Anchorage, when all the containerized freight started rolling in. And I don't really know the timeline on the port of Anchorage and, you know, when Tote and Sealand started making regular runs there. But for Lower Peninsula, we used to have regular barge deliveries here.
Regular as in every week?
Oh, I would say monthly.
Mm-hmm. So monthly, and so are we talking about the same thing, the container ships and the barges?
Well, barges with containers on.
Uh-huh, and that would be a monthly event?
Yes, I remember.
Okay.
Yeah. It might have been less than that. I'm not sure.
And that was just what those containers contain everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. All just mixed merchandise.
Could be lumber, building supplies, could be groceries, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They had reefer vans and things like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ferry was using that dock too.
And which ferry was
that? The Tustamina. And so materials would come in from Lower 48 and then be staged here and then loaded out on the ferry and taken out further west. To Kodiak and Seward and, I mean, Kodiak and Seldovia and Port Lyons and on like that, so.
The Tustamina went to those
places. Those Tustamina went out there, yeah. So, in Homer was a hub. It still is serving as a hub in that the Tustamina is homeported here and materials do come in and are staged and then loaded on the Tustamina and depart. And that's how the Pioneer Dock is currently used, so that use is still going on.
And it's also used by the Coast Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And when did they start using it?
I just saw something written. So when the Coast Guard, I'm not sure exactly when the Coast Guard showed up, but they came with the Sedge, and it would have been, I'm just taking a guess, sometime in the early 70s.
4-4, you were here.
Before I was here. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, I've always known them to be here. They were in that berth on that dock, that side berth.
Side berth.
But you have a picture here. Nope. Oh, no, that's, well, I can explain to you. They, when we built the Pioneer Dock, we took cut a portion off here.
Yep.
There was a side berth built here.
Okay.
And that's where the cutter Sedge would tie up to, and that got removed.
That's it.
There you go. Yep.
Yep. In fact, it says cutter's edge. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, that's all right.
Any other Coast Guard vessels? Sedge, then?
Well, it was Sedge, and then it became the Hickory. When we built the new dock. Okay. I don't think there were any other vessels here home ported. We had other vessels that would come to visit.
Mm-hmm. For example?
Vessels from Kodiak. I believe the Ironwood is one that I remember. And lots of, just several different vessels from the Kodiak area. Sometimes they would bring, buoys over that needed to be deployed by the Homer cutter. And so, they would bring buoys in from maybe a new buoy had been reconditioned or something, offloaded on the dock, and then the cutter would put it in the yard, and then they'd put it out whenever they were doing their work. So there's a fair bit of transfer like that that goes on.
Any military vessels? Navy vessels?
Navy vessels, yes. Yeah.
For example?
I don't have any names. But we've had Navy vessels here. We've got actually pictures of my family, my sons, on Navy vessels for home when they came for a port visit, and they opened it up to the public. And so we've got pictures when, now that would have been about 30 years ago.
It's been that long ago since there have been Navy vessels here?
Oh, no, we've had them since. Yeah, we've had them since. We just had one this summer.
What's it like here when a Navy vessel comes to town?
Well, it's fun. The sailors are on their best behavior, and the public really turns out for it. The one we had here this summer.
This is the kind of town you can shoot up. It's like...
Yeah, right. You're not going to get away with that. Yeah. Well, a few years ago, so I was deputy at the time, we had a Navy ship come to town, and prior to their arrival, you'll get a security team that comes in to evaluate your facility to make sure that it's adequate and to give you contact information in case there's any issues. They meet with the police department, they meet with the harbor staff, they meet with the city manager. And it was the ship had come, and the sailors get off and they have shore leave, and there's a baseball game, and they have picnics and stuff. There's all kinds of activities.
Nice.
Maybe even some volunteer work where the sailors will come in and do some work in town to help out. Anyway, one of the harbor officers was getting off work, and he drove to town, and he stopped at the liquor store on his way home to get some beer. When he walked in, the nice young woman that was working the counter was drying her eyes, and he was like, "What's the matter?" And she said, "Well, one of these guys off the ship came in and tried to buy alcohol, but when I asked for his ID, he got abusive and upset her. And so he called me," and I said, "Oh, okay." So I called the security person, and he said, "Do they have a tape?" And I said, "Well, yeah, they have a tape there." And he says, "Well, good, we'll go by in the morning and see it." So I always imagined that young man was scrubbing decks for weeks to come because of his bad choices, but that's how we learn, right?
Exactly. I've learned a few of those lessons myself.
Me too. It's too small a town to be pulling that stuff.
Yeah, I grew up in a small town, yeah. So,
So did I. I moved 3,000 miles away.
Was there ever any military transshipment here? Any military items that came in?
Not that I can recall where we've had a material or equipment come down from Anchorage to be shipped out or vice versa come mm-hmm. across our dock. But I've always known that we are a backup plan for that instance. If something happened with at Anchorage dock was not available, that they would use Homer and Seward as a backup plan for just that very thing. Mm-hmm. If they've got to load, they would make that work. Pioneer dock was built to capacities to be able to do that. And if you look at the these trestles coming off the dock with the ships, the container ships at the time, the tote ships, Now, tote, of course, tote is a drive-on, drive-off ship. Mm. So you don't use a crane to offload the containers. They drive on with a little bobtail truck, hook onto the trailer units, and drive off the ship. And so these trestles lined up with the doors on the tote ship at the time. I think they've gotten bigger now, so it probably doesn't line up as well. But that was a reason that this was built in this fashion, so that if needs be, we can use that dock for that purpose. Because you know that here in Alaska, we have just-in-time service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you coordinate with the Seward Harbor Master and the Anchorage Harbor Master over security issues and emergency stuff. Is that something regular, or how does that work?
Well, we don't really. No, we don't get together and coordinate with that. We coordinate with the captain of the port, the Coast Guard captain of the port, who is District 17, who has oversight for security and all things marine in this district, which is probably the biggest one in the world, because it starts at Prince William Sound and goes all the way up to Beaufort Sea. So it's a big district, a lot of land miles.
And the headquarters is in Anchorage.
It's in Anchorage. Yeah,
I know where that's at.
Yeah,
down there by the Captain Cook.
So they are in charge of the regulated facilities, which our docks became after 9/11. We have to have a facility security plan. It's a written plan that we follow, and they have to have employees that are trained to implement the plan, and a screening of anybody that goes on the facilities, and an agreements between the vessel and the facility each time they arrive, manifests, and all of that stuff when it comes to security, so that we have a better handle on what is actually being transferred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you ever had any security incidents here in the time you've been?
Stupid ones.
Yeah, I'm not. I couldn't imagine that there's malicious stuff, but
yeah,
accidents.
We had a fellow that actually out on the Pioneer Dock, there was a Tustamina was in the berth offloading. So because of her size and the number of passengers, the Tustamina is a regulated vessel, which means the dock then becomes a regulated facility when she's there. So gates are in place, security protocols are followed. And we had a fellow that the Tustamina controls this trestle, and there's a gate across here separating the Tustamina's business from the Hickory.
There?
Yep. And we had a fellow that one bright sunny afternoon in the summertime, he decided he wanted to get some pictures of the Tustamina. He couldn't get close here because the gates blocking these other trestles off. So he walked down past the Cutter Hickory, and he wasn't challenged by the crew. They're doing their own thing, and they just didn't challenge him. And he actually went around this gate. He had to hang himself out over water to get around the gate, and walked up to the ship and was taking pictures when the manager for the terminal there said, went out and addressed him. and that poor man got more attention than you can imagine. The state troopers were there, the Coast Guard was there, the
That's
port
exactly
and harbor
what
staff
I don't
were
want
there.
To happen to me.
We've always joked that he's probably still getting randomly selected at the airports, you know, again.
Goodness.
That's just dumb. Now, the way that's looked at is, was he testing our facilities? Was he testing our system and our resolve in following the rules?
Or is he just stupid?
Or is he just stupid? So, one thing I ask sometimes, are you dumb or just stupid? Yeah. Are you drunk or just stupid? Yeah. No, that was just... He worked really hard at that. But anyway. No, other than that, we've had pretty clear sailing. It's maybe mostly just a pencil whipping and following the protocol. So, mm-hmm. and we do a good job of it. Mm-hmm. I actually don't see anything wrong with having security in place. Mm-hmm. The old days when we had to shoo the people out of the way so we could tie the ship up, that wasn't really responsible. Mm-hmm. But it was a hard pill to take for the community when we put the gates up. They did not like it. Alaskans don't like rules.
That's why we're here, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar then with the scope of work and the anchors. You can see,
I am.
See them here. What's their impact? It looks to me from the plans that they have no impact on this timber dock. Is that your perception?
I do not believe they have any impact with the timber dock. Mm-hmm. We've been over this plan several times, mm-hmm. and I don't see any reason that we have any objection to it. The only thing we're going to have to be very careful of is the outfall line. We have an outfall line that we've given them as-builts for, but they're going to have to locate. Is it, I think it comes down through here. Oops, it turns and comes out here. It's buried about 2 feet under the surface, and that's our outfall line from our grinder where we grind up all the fish waste and pump it out in. To this all DEC approved program there, but yeah, you bust that and you'll know you've done something, that's for sure. So it'll smell.
And this timber dock is not used for anything now.
It is not.
And how long has it been not in use?
Well, we moved the pipeline. So we had the Petro Marine, the tank farm that's up here in the uplands. They had their pipeline out on this pier. And they got it moved about 4 years ago. So probably, I don't know, maybe 2013, 2014 timeline. And since then, that dock no longer has any function at all. And it is our intention to remove it before it falls down.
Mm-hmm. Well, this document that I prepared will be very useful to
Good.
You in terms of, you know, permitting and all that jazz.
That'd be great.
Anything else I need to know about the timber dock or the pioneer dock that I haven't thought about asking yet? Any historic vessels ever docked up there, or any historic events, or...
Well, I'm sure there's been quite a history of vessels. Like I said, we had the Navy there. We actually had the Greenpeace was there too. I remember that was an event. Yeah, the Rainbow Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was in the newspaper.
What was that like?
Kind of a lot to do about not much, truthfully. Mm-hmm. You know how most of these things work out. You know, they came to town, they got supplies, and they left. We didn't, no protesters or anything like that. So.
I was during the Exxon Valdez spill. I ran their cultural resource stuff, and so I was in the command center when everybody locked themselves to the doors and all that sort of stuff.
Really? Yeah.
It was interesting being on the inside, because sometimes I'm on the outside of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had friends out there that were videotaping the event. Going, it's interesting being on a different side of the fence here.
Yeah.
And also seeing an event like that from the inside compared to seeing what it's like in the media.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That was an eye-opener.
Yeah. Almost makes you not even want to watch the news, doesn't it?
Well, these days, everybody's got some so much of an axe to grind that it makes me pay less attention, because no matter whether you get extreme right or extreme left or in the middle, there's less validity to it these days. No matter where you get it, it just makes me pay less attention. Yeah. But that's an aside. I have another question.
Yeah.
Which is not about this, but when I was here in working in Saldovia, I looked out in the bay. By golly, there's the Chilcat out there. That old
She's
ferry.
Gone now.
Yeah? What happened to it? And why was it there in the first place?
Well, so abandoned derelict vessels is a subject that's near and dear to my heart, because we as a state are going to be overrun with them. Our fleet is aging. And we don't have a good plan for that eventuality when a vessel has no more useful life.
Right? Who's responsible?
Well, who's responsible is the owners, but who ends up stuck with it? That's the bigger question.
Well, enforcement, I mean, what?
There is none. There is no enforcement, no formal agency set up to deal with enforcement. So we've actually been working. There's an association of harbor masters in the state called the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators. And we've been meeting for 38 years. And we just had our last conference last week. And one of the issues that we've taken on as an association is abandoned derelict vessels. And I've been serving on a task force that was made up of state agencies and all the affected parties that we could think of that have an axe to grind in this subject. And the harbor masters absolutely do. The Chilcat was retired out of service for the ferry service 25 or 30 years ago, 20 years ago, I suppose. And they sold it out into private industry. Somebody bought it. They had a plan. I'll turn it into a private ferry. I'll turn it into a lodge. It changed hands so many times. Who knows?
My son's aunt said she bought fish or sold fish to it once, one season somewhere.
Interesting. Yeah. The point is that it was built as a ferry, and any other function was probably less feasible as far as a business plan goes. They, over the years, while it was anchored it was haunting harbors all over the state. It ended up anchored in Saldovia Bay because they wouldn't allow it to come in the harbor. They made it a run at coming in the harbor here before several different years. Every once in a while, I'd get a call, well, we're coming into your harbor. No, you're not. Think again. Yeah, I've actually got a police force to back me up. So, yeah. The last time that they came, one of the local guys was operating the vessel. He had been hired to transport it to Seattle. They had sold it to somebody who was going to turn it into some sort of an oyster processing facility. And that was all great news that it was leaving and going back to Seattle or going, lower 48. It's closer to the yards that can actually break it up and dispose of it when they finally decide to do that. But they wanted to bring it into Homer Harbor, and we said no. And in the end, we did let them in, but we had our lawyer got involved with their lawyer, and we had a firm timeline. You can be in here for this many days, and we had enough incentive there in place for them to follow that to meet their agreement and get out of here. They weren't, we didn't welcome them with open arms for sure, but we sure helped them get out of town.
Did they make it
to Seattle? They made it to Seattle just fine. It's in Lake Union still, 5 years or more later.
I'll look for it next time.
Plan,
fly over.
Plan failed, from what I understand.
Huh. Yeah. Well, another question. The Association of Harbor Masters that you referred to,
mm-hmm.
from your perspective, what harbors in the state have big problems with derelict vessels, some more than others, I would imagine?
Some more than others, some larger vessels, some smaller vessels. Just depends on kind of that use of that facility. If you have moorings for large vessels, chances are you're going to have a large derelict vessel. If you only have moorings for small vessels, then chances are you'll just have that size class. all harbors are dealing with it. And more to the point, the reason the state is stepping up and paying attention is because they're wide open target. Back bays and sloughs that these vessels get put in and left, and everybody that's responsible, adios is out of here, tries to get themselves removed as fast as they can from ownership, and we as a public will end up stuck with the bill cleaning up the messes. So, yeah, that's definitely a sideline to our conversation today, but it's something that we've taken on as an association, and the state has gotten involved as well. We wrote new legislation, and it's Senate Bill 92, and that's going to be on the floor this session.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I vote your victory on that.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty important.
We think it's very important. I just think that we as a society have a thinking error when it comes to vessels. We act as if they'll last forever. And that's simply because we don't have a plan for anything else but that. And so what happens is this hot potato program, hot potato management program, when I came on as harbor master, we had 16 large derelict vessels tied at our moorings here. And some of them we wrecked, broke up, shipped out as scrap steel. Some of them we forced out. They went lower 48, went to other harbors. In the end, I worked for the city of Homer, and the goals were clear. We needed more space for paying customers, and we need to get the junk hauled out. So we did. And those that went to other locations, Lake Union, other places like that, I'm not particularly proud of the fact that we shoved that misery off onto somebody else. The problem's not solved. It's just relocated.
Well, like you say, closer to the scrapyard.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. So it's going to be a challenge. One of the challenges we're going to be facing in the next 10 years. So.
You going to stick it out for another 10 years?
I hope to stick it out 8 more.
Yeah.
I'm 60. I'll be 60 next month. And I hope to work to 68. So.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I've been doing this a long time, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I like what I do. I like the job. I like, the people. I like public service. Something I discovered about myself a while back that was surprising, but I actually do like it. Mm-hmm. I don't mind the process. I get frustrated with the process, with the amount of effort it takes to move something through the public process and get this consensus built so that it can become policy or law. Mm-hmm. But I'm proud of it when it's done, when we actually accomplish that. So you just don't want to be around me in the middle of that process.
I may be someday.
My poor long-suffering wife.
I may be someday. I tend to, being sort of a senior researcher, you end up getting the really sticky jobs,
mm-hmm.
right? And I enjoy that. I like trying to make a whole lot of people happy.
Yeah.
It's not always possible, really. No. Is it possible? But if anybody's going to be able to do it,
yeah,
I'm up for that.
Yeah.
In this arena,
mm-hmm.
In the culture resource arena.
Yeah, it's cool.
Well, I think we've about hit the high points. I really appreciate all this help. And
yeah.
Turn the tape off here.
Okay.